Good evening to you, David. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you.
Good. I had my order sort of mixed up there. I said SASA needs to pay back, but CPS needs to pay back the money. Why is that?
Well, this is a payment that was made by SASA to CPS that the Auditor General found to be fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and we were looking at it at the same time, could find no reason for this payment having been made, and certainly no contract in which, in terms of which the payment was made. It's a lot of money. And so we have reviewed the payment, and what we are asking for the court to order is that SASA reclaim this large amount of public money from CPS, which, as I'm sure all the listeners know, has had a very controversial relationship with the whole social grants system already. In fact, we were part of the court process some years back that had the whole contract between SASA and CPS declared unlawful. Their relationship has continued because SASA has never gotten it together to replace it, and then added to the many billions of rands that they've paid CPS to manage the social grants, we found this additional figure of 317 million rand, which appeared to have no basis whatsoever. So, after having applied for it 2 years ago, we were in court today.
No, that's this has been an ongoing issue that has been of serious concern, David, for quite some time now. And the court has been very scathing of this. It doesn't seem that the minister has been very cooperative in this whole process. But just in terms of understanding this broad net of SASA CPS shenanigans, where does this fit in? Was this payment made before or after the initial court judgment by the Constitutional Court? And I believe that came through in November 2013.
I'm not sure. I think this payment was made after that.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that the controversy arises from the fact that SASA have had a relationship with CPS that has been riven with procedural irregularities. That's for sure. So the original contract was awarded under peculiar circumstances. A number of regulations were violated, like the manner in which they brought in their black economic empowerment partners. And so, we went to court as part of the court action in the first instance, had the contract declared unlawful. But, as I said earlier, the relationship has continued. And then these odd payments, including this one, have been made, which are also irregular. The issue with irregular payments is that we are not the police, and we're not a criminal justice organization, so we can't investigate anything beyond the irregularities. And so we can take SASA to court and have the contract declared unlawful because they did not follow the rules in entering into the contract, or in this case of this 317 million rand, not having a contract at all. But the Constitutional Court said that where there are irregularities of this nature, one should ask what lies beneath them. Why was this irregularity committed? In whose interest was it committed? And I'm afraid that's something that only the police can do, and the National Prosecuting Authority, but they have shown no appetite for looking into this at all, despite the controversies. And so, one's got to ask oneself, why is it that the police are so reluctant to look into it? What is it that they don't want to find out, actually?
And that is what is so fascinating, because I was actually going to ask you, as Corruption Watch, and I'm not asking you to speculate, I'm not asking you to cast aspersions, but is this as simple as, a private company being hired to do this service that government should be providing at a very high cost, or is there something underneath, an undercurrent, especially in this current environment where we find that ministers and the president and goodness knows whoever else has been seriously implicated in all kinds of nonsense?
Well, I should just say in response to that we're all entitled to ask those questions and to expect the authorities to answer them. And to date, they have not done so. But I think that there are serious questions to answer there. Like, what is the relationship between the minister, CPS, SASA, that have led them to enter into these irregular contracts? After all, you know, following the rules is not rocket science. And the most obvious and simple rules have been broken now on a number of occasions, including, as I say, in this 317 million Rand transaction. They're not even being assigned contract as to why they should have paid them 317 million Rand. So I'm wanting to ask, and you're asking, and a lot of people are asking, what is there about the relationship that has led to these irregularities? Is this simply incompetence or carelessness? Or, as the Constitutional Court said, does it betoken, does it sort of infer something more sinister? And I can't answer that question, and you can't answer that question, but a thorough investigation by the authorities empowered to ask those questions and have them answered is what is needed, although the horse may have bolted. In any event, it may be too late, but at least we can claim that money. At least we can ask the court to order that that public money be repaid.
Indeed. And I mean, yeah, sure. So we have 317 million being paid back, right? And you know, this contract obviously being changed in such a way that it's obviously befitting of what we want to see and how we want to see our government and our state being run. But at the very same time, David, I'm pretty sure that it doesn't just end there. I mean, this matter does need to be investigated further, because I'm pretty sure an organization like that of yourself and the rest of South African society would like to see the senior officials that do seem to be abusing their powers and for dubious reasons, as we suspect, we would like to see some justice being brought against them.
We would at the very least like to have the question answered as to whether there was some untoward relationship, if you like, that led to this contract, or if it was just sheer carelessness, negligence, incompetence on the part of SASA that led them to paying CPS this significant amount of money. If it's the latter, they should be held to account for that as well. I mean, the public servants who did this, you know, you should know that in this case, we filed this application 2 years ago. SASA opposed the application, as did CPS, but the application being a review of a public decision is against SASA. A couple of months ago, SASA withdrew their opposition, so they're not even opposing our claim. They're kind of acknowledging that this payment had no basis. And CPS are opposing the claim. But SASA have pulled out of the action. And so we want to say, if you're acknowledging if you're at least acknowledging that the claim has no basis and yet you paid it out, what is going to happen to those officials who sanctioned the payment of the significant amount of money, despite there being no legal basis for the invoice that was submitted to them by CPS?
No, 100%, David. I mean, David, well, what do we expect and what do we hope to come out of this particular inquiry? And I know this is something that you have been focusing on heavily. And my guess immediately would be at the heart of it is that South Africans get, bang for their buck, in that we have an efficient state that efficiently distributes a social grant to 17 million people that are dependent on it, right? On the one end. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I presume that there's also a need for justice. And that people are brought to book and held to account, not just for this instance, but others as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a need for accountability. You know, in this instance, if this is purely the fault of the SASA officials, and they've been either, as I say, careless, negligent, ignorant of rules that they should be very familiar with, then they must account for it. They must be held accountable for it. If they say, listen, this wasn't our doing, actually the minister ordered us to do this, or the DG said that we had to do this, or we knew that because it was CPS we should just listen and do it, then let them say that. You know, let them say, actually, it wasn't our fault in a direct way. Let them say that. But I think whoever is responsible for fruitlessly and wasting 317 million rand of public funds needs to tell us why they did it.
I hear you. And I mean, just as a final issue that I wanted to raise from you is that obviously a lot of the time we find sort of mid-level officials caught up in this mix where it's someone in a very senior office that, that could determine the outcome of the rest of your career, or at least it seems that way, telling you to do this. We know from experience that being a whistleblower is a very, very difficult thing because your life might be at risk. Your job might be at risk, family funds, et cetera, all those things are at risk. David, what is the incentive for people to come forward and to say that, listen, either to yourselves or to the state in this instance to say, listen, there's shenanigans going on. I'm calling shenanigans. I'd like to see something being fixed immediately.
Well, I mean, there are a range of incentives on a spectrum from someone whose main sort of driver is to, you know, make a positive contribution to the institution that he or she works for, the society that one's in. I think that what you're going to start finding more and more is that people start coming forward because they might find themselves in the firing line, and they might well come and say, listen, in the environment that I worked in, it was not worth my life to say no. And you know, I think that's going to be starting to come out of the woodwork more and more, and you may see some very senior people who have been deeply complicit in this, and this certainly doesn't apply to all whistleblowers by any stretch of the imagination, but you may find some people who have sort of fed handsomely at the trough. And you know, it's called plea bargaining, if you like, in the sort of prosecutorial lexicon, coming forward and pleading to strike a bargain with the prosecutorial authorities, and I think that is going to start happening. But you know, most whistleblowers come, and it's easy to be able to say, "Well, you could have told us this sooner," or "Were you involved in it?" But I've learnt to have sort of empathy with sometimes how difficult it is if you're in a really toxic environment to do this, and you know, where truly people have, you know, often solid reasons for fearing for their lives if they are seen to be the ones sort of spilling the beans on their colleagues. And there are all sorts of social pressures, threats, whatever, that sometimes you have to just be slightly, I suppose, empathetic for sort of the human condition to pass very harsh judgment on, as I say, people who could have told the story earlier. This doesn't mean you condone it. It just means you understand it. But what it does mean is that you listen to their stories very, very carefully.
100%. David, we'll have to leave it there. All the best to you, and hopefully this mess gets sorted out, because at the heart of it, 17 million people that deserve better.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All the best. That was David Lewis. He's the Executive Director at Corruption Watch.